Hello and welcome to the Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm speaking with Catholic citizen and high school educator John Martin. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me again.
People who are pro-life or any religious orientation often feel that we're not allowed to voice our opinion in public. We're not allowed to influence laws or the public sector because of our religious tone, that we're constantly told that there's this separation of church and state. Could you tell us exactly why this is a fallacy, that we should have every right to use our beliefs to influence our legislators and our laws?
Well, if for no other reason, people of faith are citizens. Any citizen who goes to church, anyone who votes, we have the rights of citizenship. And John Kennedy really created the problem for us in modern times when in 1960 in Dallas, he affirmed quite emphatically that he was going to not allow his Catholic faith to interfere with his functioning as a president of the United States. He struck a dire blow to people of faith throughout this country when he said that. He was wrong. He should have taken the Joe Lieberman approach. Joe Lieberman sat there when he was asked if he would allow his faith to influence his politics. He said, "Of course I am." He says, "I'm a practicing Jew. My Judaic faith is incredibly important to me, and it's going to influence my decisions in everything I do."
You would have to. I mean, if you're religious at all, it's a part of you. I mean, it influences your thinking. If it doesn't influence your legislating abilities, then there's something wrong with you. what guidepost are you using?
And that's a very good question, because you've just basically tossed away your moral compass. It's really comical in the United States, because in the United States, there are two reasons why the British colonies were founded here in the United States. Pure venture capitalism, people wanting to make money, setting up colonies as commercial plantations to reap profits, and to escape religious persecution. When you look at almost every one of the 13 original colonies and every one of the 13 states, in their charters or constitutions, when they establish public schools, the purpose almost universally for public education was to educate children to read and write so they could understand the Bible.
Wow.
The purpose of the that was the primary schools. The grammar schools, which is kind of like the middle schools, those were designed to give children, you know, a little more advanced education to prepare them for eventually going to colleges. The first colleges established in the United States universally were colleges that were designed to train ministers and clergymen. So this country, on its very basis, was founded by people of faith who wished to practice their faith. The colony of Maryland was founded as a refuge for Catholics. James, who was the king at that time, was ardently anti-Catholic, persecuted Catholics severely, and Catholics were able to get a refuge in this colony, even though that didn't work out very well. As a Protestant majority in the colony of Maryland came in, they began persecuting the Catholics. All throughout most of the history of the United States, God has been an integral part of our nation's fabric. John Adams was a minister, our second president. George Washington invoked the Bible constantly.
Right.
Abraham Lincoln drew inspiration especially from the Old Testament as he suffered leading this country during the Civil War. Throughout history, presidents have demonstrated their faith time and time and time again. And until fairly recently, it's been an accepted thing.
Mm-hmm.
In the past 50 to 60 years, you've seen a shift, a secularization of America, where the minority has become the loud majority where it counts. There was a Civil War general who never worried about numbers per se. He said that the secret to winning a battle was to get their most, you know, firstest with the mostest. And that's what the secularists do in the United States. They're organized. and people of faith are not. They've hijacked our Constitution. They've hijacked our country. They've hijacked our city governments, our state governments, and our federal government. And we've sat back and let them because we allow them to set the tone. We allow them to tell us, your faith has no business. They twist that First Amendment.
Right. Now, it's interesting because, you know, it's always been, you know, separation of church and state. And my understanding was always that, well, the state wasn't going to dictate to the church, you know, certain things, where obviously the secularist was saying that the church wasn't going to dictate to the state anything. And yet, a couple weeks ago, we were bombarded with a bill from our own state legislators that would basically have imposed certain limits on the Catholic Church. I mean, basically dictating the bylaws of the parishes in the Catholic churches in Connecticut.
This was a cowardly and devious attack by two Connecticut legislators, the co-chairs of the Judiciary Committee of the General Assembly, McDonald and Lawler. They claim that this bill was initiated on the behest of a number of concerned Catholics who felt that the church hierarchy was abusing their position and authority as far as how parishes and dioceses are run as corporations,
yeah,
financially. Under the model that's been in practice since 1862 anyways, I've actually spent a couple hours these past couple of weeks looking back at Connecticut statute dating back to the 1870s and 1880s. The law that I found that was germane was one that pertained to the Catholic and Methodist churches, which allowed them to create corporations in which the pastors and the bishops would be effectively the head of these corporations. Mm-hmm. This has been the practice for quite some time. Attorney General Blumenthal said that this might actually be an unconstitutional in and of itself. I don't know if he's sitting there saying that the statute itself is unconstitutional. If he is, I agree with him, because in 1880, they should have never even legislated that. The church is the church. You know, the secular world is a secular world. And in the Constitution of in and of itself, we have the right to donate and support houses of worship for the support and maintenance of the pastors and endeavors related to the practicing of our faith.
I did sit in on some of that testimony, and one of the constitutional lawyers did bring that up. And what he said was that, one, it was constitutional because at the time it was written in conjunction with the bishops.
Okay.
And it was written for the sole purpose of the church to be able to operate as a corporation, doing business with other corporations. And third, it had been tested in the courts several times and had been held up as constitutional.
It's I unfortunately had to miss that event on Wednesday.
It was a long day.
It was a long day, but it was a good day because ultimately. The chairs of the Judiciary Committee were forced to withdraw this bill. But it was a tactic, and we need to be very careful with what's going on in the General Assembly, because everyone heard about 1098. Nobody heard about 1389. 1389 was a physician-assisted suicide bill that these same two gentlemen, it was another anonymous bill, that these two gentlemen tried to slip into a hearing for the Judiciary Committee as well. And it was another one of these, you know, under the covers, you know, fly by night, let's keep it quiet, introduction. That one actually never even made it to debate.
Right.
They killed the bill because of a tremendous outcry. There's going to be more. This is in a boxing match, I would consider this to be where your opponent is testing you with, you know, jab, 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 you know,
right,
hook, jab, 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 hook. And then, you know, you're going to get lulled into that pattern, and you're not going to see the uppercut until it hits you in the jaw.
Well, we've been being jabbed for a long time. I mean, are people going to start waking up? I mean, I was very heartened to see the number of people who showed up for the bill regarding the corporation of the church, and people standing up for their church. because it was obviously unconstitutional, that bill. But do people, do they know that we have the right to stand up and stand up for our faith and stand up for our beliefs in this nation?
This was a very black and white issue. This was something that, and I think that Catholics need to develop a little more courage, and people in faith in general need to develop a little more courage, because, I mean, this was a very safe issue. Nobody was really going to criticize anyone for saying, you know, I stand against, you know, this Bill 1098.
Right.
Nobody actually would really get in too many, not too many people would be very upset with somebody who was saying, I oppose physician-assisted suicide. These are fairly safe ones, and the safe ones you're going to get the good big turnout on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be interested in seeing when they really start pushing some of the really heavy-duty issues. You know, some of the issues with sex education,
mm-hmm,
and the role that Planned Parenthood. Last year, there were members of the General Assembly with pressure of Planned Parenthood to try to introduce legislation where Planned Parenthood would actually be working on sex education programs in elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools. Are people do you really think that's going to be as easy for people to stand up for? Now we're moving into the gray zone. Abortion is an issue that a lot of Catholics are very uncomfortable with. The fact that there was a large number of people who probably called themselves Catholics for Obama, who's the most pro-abortion president on record, shows you how confused Catholics are,
right,
on fundamental issues. I don't know if this is I think this is a good sign in the fact that people stood up, and I think that maybe you might see more of them saying, I liked this, or It's nice to be able to actually see something through. It's nice to be able to influence government.
Right.
Will they be there when the chips come, you know, are down? That's a question that, unfortunately, we're going to be finding out sooner than we'd care to, I think.
So I still, you know, come back to the idea that, you know, we've been kind of pushed down. Okay, your faith, you know, it doesn't play an integral part in your politics. And you kind of mentioned, you know, Catholics for Obama. Is there any way to change that tide? You know, I mean, you can't go to church on Sunday and believe this, and then go to work on Monday and live that. How do we change the tide?
In a lot of ways, you know, and I'm sorry to the Reverend Fathers who watch this. I blame the church. I blame the pastors. And I blame the hierarchy, because they allowed this to happen over the course of several decades. I think that the church, in an attempt to be, you know, all-encompassing and very well-intentioned priests, don't get me wrong, I'm not disrespecting, you know, our priests, but I think that a lot of them, in the attempt to seem like that we're tolerant and we're all encompassing, that I think we sold ourselves down the river a little too much, and we need to learn how to sit there and say, no, this is against our doctrine, this is against the tenets of our faith, this is wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it's wrong.
I think our bishops and I know our priest, a lot of the priests that I, you know, saw during the election cycle were pretty clear. You know, they didn't come out, mm-hmm, and say you can't vote for Obama, but they might as well have, because it was very clear in some of the sermons, and some of the bishops were undoubtedly clear on that issue. And yet it didn't seem to make a difference. Was it too little too late?
Yes. It was too little too late, and my generation of Catholics, the baby boomers and the, you know, tail end of the baby boomers, we were raised in a faith that's really very much pulpit to the parking lot. You know, that's when the sermon starts fading away. And church is something that you do on Sunday. You know, you go in there, you sing, you stand, you sit, you kneel, you listen to Father, you take communion, and you leave and go to breakfast, and then play baseball, play football, do whatever it is you're going to do. And by supper time, it's forgotten. That needs to change. It became a very self-centered society, and far too many Catholics, and I think some other religions, allowed ourselves to be steered into this idea that here's church, here's the world. And some of it has to do, I think, once again, with that old argument, the separation of church and state. If you actually speak to a lot of constitutional scholars, they don't call it the separation of church and state clause. They call it the establishment clause.
Right.
If you read the Constitution, if you read that First Amendment carefully, it says that there will be no established religious institutions.
Right. So there's not going to be a Church of England. There's not going to be a Church of the United States.
The founding fathers, the framers of the Constitution, were terrified that this wasn't going to work. The Articles, the Confederacy, under our first form of national government was called the Articles of Confederacy, and it was a miserable failure. The Constitution was written as a last-ditch attempt to try to pull things together before everything spun apart. Many of the states objected to the Constitution as it was, which I think is unfortunate because it's the most elegant recipe for government ever created. If you want proof that God has blessed the United States, read the Constitution carefully, because wiser words and a better government has never been established than in the Constitution of the United States. If we would just keep to it. Unfortunately, the Bill of Rights kind of muddied the waters. Too many states did not trust the fact where the Constitution said, guys, listen, we don't need a bill. This is what the government can do. If it doesn't say the government can do it,
then we can't,
they can't do it.
But, and it's up to you, the states.
And exactly. The states and ultimately the people have the sovereign power. The Bill of Rights were introduced to make these states happy. The first one was the Establishment Clause. And the reason why is there were a lot of people who were terrified that we would end up having a Church of England, a Church of America.
Right.
Connecticut, the Congregational Church, was the official church of the state of Connecticut until 1818. The state was required to have a constitutional convention, rewrite the Constitution, but until 1818, you paid a tax to support your local congregation. Whether you were Catholic, Jewish, Muslim, Presbyterian, whatever, or just non-practicing, you were still participating and supporting your local congregational minister. This is what the Establishment Clause is all about. I like to explain it as the Establishment Clause says that I should not be afraid of government.
Right.
All right. People of faith, should not be afraid of their government
interfering in their business.
The government should be afraid of people of faith. We are citizens, and we hold the sovereignty. In this country, majorities still is supposed to rule.
Right.
And if people actually united, and worked together, and expressed themselves, and voted the way that our doctrine compels us to vote, I mean, we'd be much more powerful.
And our nation would be much better off. You know, people, our citizens would be much better off. I mean, we've allowed so much garbage to come down on us, and it's really made our country just a horrible, horrible mess, our society.
In many ways, yes. And the thing of it is that there's a litmus test that I think you really need to apply to people of faith in politics. Even if our motivations are religiously oriented, do they serve the good of the people?
Right.
A lot of the issues, and this is, I think, one of the reasons why a lot of Catholics had issues. There are some elements of the Obama platform that were very appealing, especially to a lot of Catholic sentiments about the poverty, so a lot of people feel the plight of illegal immigration. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible thing that people are risking their lives to come into our country, and then they're living in the underground.
Well, I tell you, the church can do more for people living in poverty and illegal aliens than the government.
Well, we do.
And if we would get the government out of those things, the church would definitely have more money and more power to do those things and be able to evangelize at the same time.
And it would be nice. The point, and where I was going with this is that Catholics are torn by a lot of things where, I mean, the Democratic Party did a wonderful job of convincing people that, the conservative ideals are bad, these religious ideals are bad, and, these more progressive social freedom ideals are more tolerant and more open and more accessible to all. And that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
The founders of our country created a government that was limited on purpose. If they were to see what this country had become, they would be appalled. If George Washington were to sit there and see that the Congress is going to be presented with a $3 trillion spending plan for next year's budget, he would be appalled. Right now, our national debt stands around $11,400,000,000. This is what we owe. It's something like $14,000 every second in interest that we owe.
Wow.
And the government continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger. As a matter of fact, I mean, under some of the plans and proposals that are currently being placed under consideration, include bills where the president's plans include things like cutting charitable deductions.
Yeah.
So deductions that people make to their churches, to the homeless shelters,
American Cancer Society. Yeah.
All of these things are going to be going by the wayside. While this is going on, the government is becoming the sort of the daddy warbucks by shelling out money to their preferred groups. Acorn is getting $4 billion under the plan that's being proposed here. Acorn is being considered as being one of the moving forces of the census, the next census.
Mm.
This is an organization that has, by some counts, up to 50,000 incidences of fraudulent votes, voter registration cards.
So what are they going to do with the census?
and once again, if they can get away with this, we let them.
Yeah.
This is what Acorn is what we should be doing. I mean, we should be organizing much stronger on grassroots levels. We should really stop. We should come out of the closet. And we should stand for what we believe to be right. Other groups do it. I mean, gay right groups have done an incredibly masterful political job of getting their agenda across. The euthanasia groups, they're doing an incredible job of getting their message mm-hmm. across. The pro-abortion groups, NARAL and Planned Parenthood, they're doing an amazing job of getting their message and their agenda across. And somehow we manage not to learn from their lessons. And we allow ourselves to continue to be fragmented. And I know why. Because we allow ourselves to be intimidated by this idea of, keep your religion out of the people's business. Look at the dollar bill. Look at the coins. It's in God we trust.
Yeah.
Look at the Pledge of Allegiance. But that's changing. The Congress has a museum. And according to the Congressional Museum, the national motto is E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one. And no, it's in God we trust. But this is what we've allowed the secular government to do.
And you propose that we get together a mobilization force like Acorn, but who would fund that? Because the government's funding Acorn. They're not going to fund the religious organization.
These sort of things, they don't cost a lot of money. Catholics are really good at spending money. I mean, one out of four people who go into an emergency room are going into a Catholic hospital. Catholic charity feeds more people and serves more people than probably the state of Connecticut does. And in many states, and I think Connecticut is one of them, Catholic Charities is the second largest provider of social services in the state. We could do these things. And if you go online, there are a lot of resources out there. The Catholic League is a very strong voice in trying to politicize religion. I've started my own website, The Catholic Citizen, and I've added a forum to it. I'm writing essays. I've got sections called Catholic 911 for big emergencies, Catholic 411 for information, and a Catholic 911 alert. Notre Dame is asking President Obama to speak as their commencement speaker, and they're awarding him with an honorary law degree. This is appalling. 83,600 people when I left had signed a petition to Father Jenkins, who's the president of Notre Dame, to voice their outrage over this. The last he said is it's still going on. I hope that Father Jenkins realizes that some of those 83,600 people used to write checks to Notre Dame. And if you're a Catholic, you need to not support these organizations that will traffic with people who support everything we're against.
And that's kind of where you come, because, like you said, some Catholics believe that the social agenda of the Democratic Party is going to offset their pro-death platform. I mean, it's clearly written in their platform. They are for abortion. They are for euthanasia. That offsets it. And so they don't understand that, you know, here's a big honor having a president speak at your commencement address, you know, giving the commencement address. How do you convince them that this is an abomination?
Notre Dame's already had something like seven presidents speak at their commencement. I think it's time for Father Jenkins Bishop to step up. I think it's time for him to suspend Father Jenkins. Maybe it's time for him to be excommunicated. It's time for us to stop being pushovers.
Yeah.
When Christ was outraged, he got mad. He took a bunch of cords and turned them into a whip and whipped those who offended him out of the temple. You got to draw the line. I'm all for compassion. I'm all for tolerance. I'm all for listening to other point of views, but I'm going to stand for what is right. I'm not going to compromise. I'm not going to back down. I'm going to argue my point, and you can't make me not vote the way I want to vote, speak out on the issues I want to speak out on. I'm done with compromising.
Well, what you're also saying, though, is that we need the leadership to step up.
We need the leadership. In matters politic, the bishops and the priests are somewhat constrained. There are groups that are waiting for a priest to speak too firmly out in the pulpit or a bishop to speak too firmly out in the pulpit. So, ladies and gentlemen, people of faith, our pastors can't speak out. Where are the leaders going to rise from? They're going to rise from you.
The pew.
And they're going to rise from me. They're going to come from the pew. So, ladies and gentlemen, you can't let it be pulpit to parking lot. You got to live it. You got to breathe it. You got to speak it. You got to vote it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for joining us today. We hope that you've learned something. We want you to go out and talk to your family and friends about the things that you've learned. And when you look in the mirror the next time, you're going to realize yours, too, is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.